Hi there, everyone. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Giving you some ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And back with you, we've got some wonderful things for you. I found an earlier lecture that I had given, which I remastered, hopefully, well for you, because it covers a subject that I think needs to be covered today. It's about hatred. Hatred, yes, hatred is a very funny emotion, hatred. So, without further ado, I'm going to play you just a few minutes of how I remastered this thing, and you could actually hear my voice from 10 years ago. 10 years ago when I originally made this recording. So let me put it on for you. Let me put it on for you, and you'll pick it up from here. What gets in the way of love? Different emotions, you know, different things get in the way of being able to love someone. Perhaps one of the most profound and rarely spoken about is hatred. Hatred, what a dreadful emotion. Today we're going to talk about hatred. We're going to look at hatred. Hatred is a strong underlying element in both sex and love. We're going to get into that part of it a little later. Most people who are listening to this program will say they never hate, and if they do at all, they hate rarely or only under extraordinary circumstances. But I don't think that's true. You see, I think most people hate and then spend a lot of time denying their hatred. It kind of comes up and then they push it away. They feel it, but either keep it very secret or they don't admit it. To make my case, look at how easy it is to locate self-hatred. That's easy. A lot of people hate themselves. So we know you've got the capacity to hate if you hate yourself. I wonder how much more hate there is inside people. Now, I'm not talking about anger. Anger is usually a shallow, brief feeling. It's a natural reaction to being hurt. Anger, we know, it is appeased by an apology. It comes, it goes. But hate runs deep to the very core. Hatred is to anger like abject despair is to sadness. You know, hatred is all-consuming. Anger is not, or at least it shouldn't be. And hatred is all-possessing. It takes you over completely. Think about it. You call it anger when you feel furious at someone, and you justify it as justifiable anger. They hurt you. You're angry. So angry that you lose all love at that moment. Now, there's a big key to the difference between anger and hatred. When you're angry at someone, you can still locate your love for them. But when you hate, there is no love. It's all gone. Think about your dog or cat who breaks or chews something you really care about. Think about how angry you felt at those moments. Then think about the part of you that may still be yelling and punishing them, but at the same time, you're still loving them. Or think about the anger you felt towards a son or a daughter, where you might even get to the point of actually feeling like hitting them, but somewhere inside, you're still aware of your love and deep commitment to their well-being. Now think about hating your child. Imagine hating your child, actually hating them. And if you can imagine that feeling, and many of you have felt it, you can understand where all battering comes from. Hatred, not anger, but beating children comes from hatred. So let's not confuse it. Hate, detest, abhor, abominate, despise, disdain, to loathe, to revile, to scorn, animosity, enmity, antipathy, rancor, spite, venom, vindictiveness. These are the kind of feeling I'm talking about that we're going to look at and we're going to unearth today with no danger because it's not going to lead to violence. But just so that you don't think we're going to go into this completely heavily, let me bring you a gift from the past that maybe help you look at it a little.
You don't know what hate is, the kind of hate that I have for you.
My hate for you is such a hot hate. I hate you with hot, heaping hunks of hate.
The heat of your hot hate could not approximate the hateful hatred that I have in hating you.
If it was possible to write the word hate on each grain of sand in the Sahara Desert, all that hate on each of those hateful grains would equal 1/1,000,000th of the hate I'm hating you with right now.
You know how much you're hating me?
Yeah.
Double it. That's my hate for you.
I used to love you, now I hate love.
How long have you hated me?
2 years.
I've hated you 4 years.
I hated you before I met you.
I hated you before you were born.
I hate your grandmother.
I hate Columbus for discovering America and making it possible for me to meet and hate you this way.
The word hate isn't big enough to hold
my
hate for you.
The gestures of hate.
Because I
hate this world, not only in this world, go out into space, go out
of your body,
into the universe, in the Milky Way, go up into Jupiter, into Mars. All the hate they have up there
will
not approximate the hateful hatred I have for you.
That's what I hate you with.
I'd like to ask one question.
What?
Do you think this marriage can be saved?
That's still in Mira from the early 60s. Kidding about it. Joking about it. But kind of telling you about something that really takes place inside people. That's the feeling I'm talking about, and most of you carry it around with you, somewhere tucked away, and it leaks out, and we're going to be hearing from you today. Hatred leaks out in those crazy, obsessive jealousies. It leaks out in that almost blind, violent, rageful attitude that sometimes manifests as a response to social injustice. Justifiable hatred. People feel they have a right to that. Like the Jews and the Arabs used to carry for each other, automatically hating each other, like we were supposed to feel for the Russians during the Cold War, or better yet, that stuff that McCarthy tapped into during the McCarthy hearings in the 50s. So let's talk about it today. Let's talk about hatred. Let's put it on the table, because I think there's a lot to be learned from examining it. And let me make my position clear. Hatred is wrong, but you're not bad for feeling it. This is Armand DeMille bringing with you this very energetic version of the positive mind. Did I say positive? Yes, positive mind. A program dedicated to your emotional and psychological maximal health. Hoping you could get by without Prozac. A program dedicated to help you understand yourself and other people better. 757-4488. Hatred. The undiscussed, underclosed emotion. Well, maybe it's not an emotion. Maybe hatred would be better described as a state of being. You know what I mean? When you hate, you're totally consumed, all engrossed. In fact, many people describe their leaks of hatred as, I was besides myself, they say. You know, I got so upset I was besides myself. Interesting perception, besides myself. Like you stepped outside of yourself and you watched yourself possessed by some rageful animal. You lost it. You were so consumed, you were no longer home. It happens a lot with alcohol, you know, and with cocaine also. Alcoholics drink to quell their hatred. Alcoholics are rageful people controlling their hatred. Think about it. Think about the suburban man who after work, or the suburban after work drinker, whose job brings up so much resentment and anger that it threatens to unleash the hatred that he's been suppressing for so many years. So after work, he or she has to stop into a bar or the bar car and have a drink or two to re-quell the hatred. But alcohol also loosens inhibitions and go from one to a few drinks and that rage begins to surface again. Anybody who knows an alcoholic has seen it. Battered wives, battered children, all alcohol released. Does the alcohol cause the hatred or does the alcohol unleash the hatred? Here's a question for you out there. Do you hate anyone? Think about it. There are people out there who hate a lot. Now, I've got to make one delineation here because we're going to be getting callers and you're going to be hearing, hopefully, the separation. You'll learn how to understand people. In psychiatry, there's one personality type that is characterized by frequent forays into hatred. That personality type is called the borderline personality. We therapists and people in the field of psychology recognize the borderline personality. I'm sure over the next few weeks as we take your calls, you'll hear from many people with this personality type. Here's what you can expect. A borderline personality is filled with rage, and they're always a victim. They hate for the injustices committed against them. Borderline personalities also have long histories of many different jobs because they can't seem to keep jobs because their anger gets in the way, or their hatred gets in the way, actually. And they have many different psychotherapists. We have a, when people come into my clinic and ask about their therapy, previous therapy, they'll list 7 or 8 different therapists that they've seen. And then they'll talk about how each job was an abusive situation and each therapist had abused them. They will explain this. Borderlines also hate boundaries, limitations put on them. It's a borderline personality who gets furious when you ask them to complete a questionnaire because in addition to hating boundaries, or should I say along with hating boundaries, the borderline personality hates being boxed in any way or defined. In fact, there are people listening right now who resent me describing their personality type. The borderline personality is an extreme case of hatred festered because the borderline personality becomes hatred itself. That's where they hang out. That's their neighborhood, hatred land. Do you know anybody like that? They could also be extremely sweet. They will have moments of ultimate, tremendous loving, and then as soon as they get wounded, boom, they flip into this hatred. Why do some folks live with just a little hatred, and why are some others so filled with it all the time? Let's look at the origin of hatred. I was doing some research on sadomasochism when I ran into a theory of hatred by a very well-known psychiatrist, Wilhelm Steckel, from way back around Freud's time. Wilhelm Steckel saw the sadomasochistic struggle as a battle of a person with themselves. He said that in some people, the childhoods were so disturbing that the child festers in anger towards his or her parents, which is not allowed expression. Because they don't allow the expression of this anger, for one reason, either by suppressing it, by beating the child, or by telling the child that they are hurting them by having them express it, this turns into hatred. Steckel believes that all people with sadistic tendencies are engaged in an effort to get rid of that toxic hatred that they feel. Very interesting, isn't it? We feel hatred, but we're trying to get rid of it. Is self-hatred really the hatred of our own hatred? You know, is it really the part of ourselves that we hate the most is the part that hates? He believed that sadism was an effort to overcome your own hatred when it's used with people by forcing someone else to submit, to surrender, to give up their will, to give up their hatred. So in a sadomasochistic struggle, a sadist dominates someone else into becoming submissive so that they surrender because the sadist can't surrender, according to Steckel. And I don't think it's only the sadist. I think this is all controlling people. They can't stop the controls because they're controlling at all times their own feelings and especially their own hatred. So in sadists, the other person is not really an individual, but an extension of yourself. In these relationships, the controlling person, when they form a relationship with somebody who is submissive, they're controlling them and in a way controlling themselves. Now, the controlling person wants desperately to give up their own hatred, and they act that out by projecting themselves into another human being and dominating that other person, humiliating them into a total surrender of will. What's also interesting, according to Steckel, is that there's an antidote for hatred. The antidote for hatred is love. Now, this I find fascinating. The feeling of love, the experience of love, if you think about it, if you bother to feel it right now, is a feeling that is absent of hatred. It's the opposite of hatred. It is a surrender. You give up. You feel love. And during those moments, if you let yourself feel love, the hatred is gone. So maybe the reason that we are so desperately searching to find love in this society is because we're trying to get rid of our own hatred. Because it's not the love that we want, it's the hatred we want to be free of. It's our own anger inside, it's that rageful stuff that possesses us that we want to get rid of. That we really want love because we want to get rid of the hatred. And maybe we wouldn't be all so consumed in finding love if we didn't have that hatred inside. Maybe then love would be a natural process, and we wouldn't be out searching in every bar or in every health club trying to find somebody who's going to love us. And we wouldn't consider life an empty thing if there's no one around to love us. Because what are you stuck with? You're stuck with yourself and your own hatred self. Self. The self that hates. The part of us that we hate the most. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's heavy stuff I'm bringing to you. But wait till you hear as we listen to the callers calling in. And we're going to be taking calls in just a couple of minutes, my friends. Well, wasn't that quite an interesting dialogue, I tell you. Listening to myself from 10 years ago, monologue, talk to you in such a way, it was a teaching class. But, you know, this love-hate conundrum, it's kind of an interesting thing. Why do we search for love so much? What is it? You know, where did it become so fashionable, the love generation? Did it grow out of the hate generation? A friend of mine in Europe says, you know, nowhere else but in America do they write about the weather in the newspapers. He said, the weather is the weather. He says, it rains, it rains. He said, when it rains, it rains. Did you see Life Without Humans, Life Without Man? It's on the Nature program, by the way. I know it's going to be reported on the History Channel. You're right. Thank you. It's on the History Channel. Remarkable, remarkable humans, and what would happen if the humans weren't there. Weather. We write about weather, and we talk about weather, and we predict weather. It's going to be very cold, and this could be a headline of a newspaper. Well, some of the Europeans laugh at us, saying, what are you doing? It's only weather. So what? It's cold. So what? It's hot. So what? It's wet. We'll put it on front pages. Well, I have the same question about love. What happened in the 60s that made us go to this other side of hatred, which is love? Where did the love generation come from? And I remember this beautiful image of it's a photograph of a soldier standing on guard with a peacenik putting a flower in the end of the soldier's rifle. Putting a daisy, I think it was, and it's this incredible photograph of this opposition, supposedly. But maybe it's not. Maybe love is the passive-aggressive way of hating. Maybe it's just another way of overwhelming somebody. You know, if only we had love, I've got to love you completely. It's saying total surrender. Maybe love, in the way we know love, is not a love based on a true appreciation of the other person, but it's a searching desire to get away from our own hateful self. And you could tell, you know, when people give up on love. And you can tell when people give up on loving and being loved and they stay at home and they don't go out. They become, I don't say hateful because nobody is hateful to me, but they're filled with a kind of resentment and anger all the time. Get a puppy dog. Get a kitten. Keep that thing alive, whatever it is. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. This is the first part in a series I'm going to do on this issue of hatred, because I think there's more information here. And as I said, if it sounds a little choppy at times, I pulled it up out of the archives on cassette tape and remastered it so that I could bring you the information the way it was presented, which later became something. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi.
Hi there.
Radio's off.
Thank you. And your name is?
Felicia.
Felicia.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Could you speak just a tad louder for me?
Sure.
Thank you.
I really love this topic about hate and anger because it was kind of synchronistic. I was thinking about it right before your show comes on, which is often in sync with me. And I had called in at the beginning of the new year when I got stiffed by a man I dated on and off who he said was passive-aggressive for 8 years, and I feel so much better now that I know that I seriously hate him.
What do you mean,
that I'm just angry, like I have no feelings, and, you know,
no,
I don't want to stay in hate.
Let's talk about that. You mean the advantage of hating him is you have no feelings?
Excuse me?
Are you saying that because you have identified yourself as hating him, you feel more comfortable?
I feel much better.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I feel way, way better.
Okay, and in the feeling that you have, you feel completely devoid of feeling? You feel separated from him?
I feel now that I have, because I have identified my feeling of hatred towards him, I feel at peace.
At peace on the inside. And let me
ask you
something.
Where I can be over him and move on.
Felicia, in your life, in your life, how many people have you ever hated? I mean, how many people have ever gotten to your heart in such a way that they could hurt you as deeply as this man did?
Well, my family hurt me, but I forgave them. I made peace with them and family members. But I'm not planning on making peace with this man. What I do to
let me just ask you one more thing about the family members, because I'm going to be tracing back the history of hatred, the history of love in all of our lives. And in your among your family members, did you have a sister that you hated?
A brother. Armand, a brother.
A brother?
Yes.
And tell me, I mean, do you still have that hatred for him?
No, I feel sorry for him.
Now you feel sorry for him, but you don't get together with him, do you?
Never.
Never, you never want to see him.
No, if I see him, I'm fine. But I will not throw myself at him, no.
Yeah.
I pray for him, actually, every day.
Yeah, because he's
however,
sad.
It's funny because when I discovered the anger about this man, I don't know, it brought out the Sicilian in me, and I'm Jewish. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and
they're not so far apart.
I know. It's like I did do a little something to him to justify the situation, which I don't really condone, but I felt 100 times better, and I started sleeping and eating better.
What did you do to him?
I'd rather not say on the air.
Okay. Well, you know, Felicia, there's a thing. There's something that I notice about you, that you're in struggle with this attachment, love, you know, hatred thing. You know, you're working at it and struggling to sort
yes,
it out.
Yes, I cannot be in limbo. I can't be in limbo.
Sure. And it's something about this giving somebody the name Felicia, which means happiness, huh?
It's Felicia in Cuban.
And it means?
Happiness, yeah.
Right, happiness. I mean, there you are, supposed to be happy. You're given the name of happy, which means they don't give you any room for anger. Right? They don't call you, you know, Miss Angry. They call you Miss Happy. And so I want to warn everybody out there, don't name your kids things like hope or charity or happiness.
Or faith.
Because, you know, people have a full range of emotions.
Well, the thing is that, you know, what I do also, too, because I don't want to be stuck in hatred, is every day I go out of my way at least half a dozen times to help someone sick and suffering to get out of my bad feelings of hatred, and it helps me a great deal.
Nice thing for you. Good for you, Felicia. Good for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. Have a nice day.
You too. 212-209-2900, black and white. Like Felicia says, you know, there is no halfway with some people. The people who have the most difficulty with hatred have this kind of all one way or all another, because the feeling is so overwhelming. I think in order for you to hate, you have to be so vulnerable inside. It means your heart has to be reachable. I know people who will never hate anybody because they can't hate anybody, but then nobody can get them that far anyway. Nobody could touch them at that spot anyway. The core is protected, as maybe the core should be. But when your heart is wide open, and when you're so vulnerable, and then somebody steps on your heart and tramples it, the pain is so big, all you could do is scream. Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. Let's take another call. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello, Armand.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Roland.
Hello, Roland.
I was listening to this hatred subject that you have, and I was wondering how does this work against you. If you hate your ex-girlfriend, ex-wife, boyfriend, Does that kind of stop you from moving on with connecting with another person?
Well, now there's an interesting question, Roland. Do you have that in your life?
Well, I don't know if it exists, but I find myself not moving on. I don't know if it's hatred.
And here's the thing, look. When we hate something, we create an attachment to it. You understand? It's like they call it cathexis. And that means that you and I are attached. If you hate something, you set up an electrical line between you and someone else. When you don't hate them anymore, and when they're insignificant, when they no longer count, when you could let them go, then you let go of hatred, and you let go of love, and you let go. So the idea is sometimes we hate people because we just are attached, and maybe symbolically attached, maybe attached to them for more reasons than just what they did. You know, maybe what they did represented everything that's ever happened to you. Let me just ask you, if you did hate your ex, how did she betray you?
I don't know if it's betrayed, but it's just like a disappointment.
She disappointed you.
Well, you know, you don't really know a person. I don't care how long you...
So you didn't really know her. You've learned things about her that you just didn't think was true. And what did you learn about her that you didn't suspect that really hurt you?
Well, the quality of people that she associated with, the things that she, you know, flamboyant type things, flashy type people, drug type people, you know, people
so
that...
So she got in some bad company and hung out with some bad people, and you didn't know she needed that. You thought she was like somebody who was going to be happy being at home with you.
Exactly.
Is that true?
Yeah, kind of. You know, it's sort of like that. Well, I just thought she was a laid-back person that, you know, that had a little more integrity than to put herself out there.
It hurt you, you know?
Sure.
You know, Roland, it hurt. And I think the main thing that separates men from letting go of hurt relationships... They don't want to feel the pain. You don't want to feel the pain of losing that person and losing your idea of who they were. You don't want to feel the pain. What you'd rather do is just, you know, stay angry at them. So my suggestion is weep in the shower. Stand in a shower and let yourself weep. And let your eyes fill and say, oh, God, I lost it. I was wrong. I made my mistake.
Exactly.
And you say goodbye in the shower.
Yeah, but how do you go to the next level when you try to reconnect with somebody else and you don't get no return phone calls?
Yeah. You gotta let your tears happen. You gotta be willing to feel the pain. And I know that it sounds trite, but it's something that men are reluctant to do.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, they stay tough.
Okay.
You know?
Sounds good, my friend.
Okay, my friend. Thanks for
coming. Thanks a lot,
Roman.
Bye.
So it brings us to why we hold on to hatreds, especially with our family. Remember, hatred is an attachment. It's a way of staying connected. And sometimes we just don't want to lose the disconnection, so you hate. You know, hate me or love me. I remember a man I once had on a radio show, and I said, how could he be pushing drugs for depression on this nutritional program? I was co-hosting Gary Nell's show. And he said to me, what do I care if they hate me or they love me? They're going to buy my book. If they don't know anything, if they just think I'm a nice guy, they're not going to buy the book. He said, so hate's just as strong as love for selling books. We're going to take a short break. When I come back, a little music. And then we'll take more of your calls.
Your love.
Here it is, intriguing song, Leonard Cohen, from his 10 New Songs album. Here it is. Yes, here it is, my friends. It is Armand DeMille here with you at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, and gifts. Music. Yeah. Music, just incredible stuff. Hey, so, you know, our telephone number is 212-209-2900. We've been discussing hatred, this feeling of hatred, this terrible feeling of that we live with on the inside, self-hatred, other hatred. And it's something that isn't spoken about. It's kind of pathologized, you know, you see it. People who have a lot of hatred are very quick to see them as being, well, you know, just psychologically disturbed because they have a lot of hatred. There are people who go around shouting all the time. They shout everywhere. They shout, they scream. People in the streets shout their wrath at people. You know, they'll walk down the streets and they'll be screaming at people. Whenever you hear anybody who's raising their voice above a normal level, you ask yourself, what's the fill here? You know, anger is a perfectly normal emotion. Hatred is an accumulation. It's an accumulation of resentments and emotions, and it goes back in time. Hatred is always part of the load that you're carrying from the past. You know? I mean, I could think of a case where one person could be so bad and so offensive that you could say, this person has destroyed my life or my family life. I've read of cases where, you know, somebody will be a criminal and they'll hold somebody up or they'll try to steal their money and then they'll kill the family or something or kill a member of the family. Then they go to court and the family is sitting watching them on trial. And the family demands that this person who's on trial for killing their daughter, they want him to fry. They want him to be executed. Because their hatred is so big. It's almost as if, how am I going to resolve? I don't want to carry this hatred feeling inside me. I don't want to carry it. I want to be free of it. Kill him. And that'll free me. It's really the feeling we have to deal with. It's the feeling inside us we have to deal with. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Going to take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, hi, Armand. My name is Lori.
Hello, Lori.
I love everything about your show.
Thank you, Lori.
Just need to say that. I was listening about hatred, and I have the classic hatred. I did have the classic hatred. I really have moved past it, but the classic hatred of my mother-in-law that did build up and got to be a very lonely place for me, you know, sitting with my hatred.
First, let's go somewhere with this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you say you had the classic hatred of your mother-in-law, you're trying to minimalize it mm-hmm. by saying, yeah, it's typical, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Let's take it off that, because this hurt you something terrible.
I am
not going to just minimalize it by saying it's a typical feeling.
Okay.
You know, so she must have seen you as an invader.
Maybe that's it, because it was all very sleight of hand, small things that built over time.
Did you have a baby, by the way?
Yes, I do. She's 9 now, and started when I had the baby.
That's exactly what I would imagine.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what happened.
Right off, like the third week I was home, first of all, I can just say that I had a very traumatic delivery. I literally almost died, you know. Mm. With a hemorrhage. So, you know, she came to the hospital, of course, very happy to meet her new grandchild. I looked like a corpse laying in the bed. So it kind of began there without any acknowledgement of, oh, my God, you poor, you know, what happened to you? Thank God you're okay, you know. It was just always, oh, this beautiful baby, 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 you know, with no concern. She came to help us out, which was the worst idea, you know, like third week into being home. She stayed with us for a whole week and was only concerned about what my husband was going to eat for dinner. When I was so sick still at that point. So that was the kind of beginning of all.
Let me ask you, Lori, where was your mother?
My mom came the second week. My mother she doesn't get along at all with this lady, as you can imagine.
I know, but what I want to know is why wasn't your mom there the first week?
Well, my husband stayed home the first week, then my mom came the second week, and my mother-in-law came the third week.
The third week, I see.
Yes.
And so your mom is there, and she's nurturing you and loving you?
She was wonderful. Mm-hmm.
She was wonderful. And then this lady comes in who doesn't even recognize you, who sees you, who doesn't know how to handle it, and she tries to take over the baby.
Yes.
And this feud starts. Whose child is it anyway?
Yes.
Whose husband is your husband anyway?
Exactly.
Does he belong
to
his
totally.
Mother, or does he belong to you?
Right.
And this thing starts, and this thing starts between the two of you that mm-hmm. lasted for how many years?
Really, honestly, it's been a lot of prayer for the last few months that I feel I've moved past it myself.
Yeah.
So, years. And the same, you know, typically when I would ask her to feed, if she ever watched my daughter, which I didn't really allow all that much. I was like Mama Lion, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I would ask her to do certain things and she wouldn't listen to my, you know, requests of how to take care of my baby, you know.
You know, it's such a funny thing. The reason I asked you about when a child is born,
mm-hmm.
very often this kind of thing gets set up, right, as at childbirth. At childbirth, your hormones are so changing and
totally.
You're turning into a different person. Plus, you have a near-death experience. You almost die.
Right.
So you are like Mama Lion, but you're worse than Mama Lion. You're Mama Lion who almost died.
Yeah.
So now somebody walks into your turf with a bad attitude, you're just going to scratch their eyes out. On top of which,
it's
when
true.
They walk into your turf and they say, I'll take your baby and I'm going to take your husband too.
Yes.
And they treat you like that. I mean, you're going to... I'm surprised you didn't chew her up. So whatever restraint you use, I congratulate you.
Oh, my goodness.
It took a lot of work.
It did. It really did.
And then you worked at it, and you tried to heal it, and you tried to heal it, but you had this wound inside you that just wouldn't heal.
Yes.
And she didn't know how to deal with the wound, so she came right back at you. And then you went right back her, and she came right back at you, and the two of you never figured it out, and she's
no.
probably too... unaware of herself to ever work it out, so it's all up to you.
She is very much unaware of anything. She's,
yeah, so
she's you know,
just,
but at the same time, a very competitive
blamer,
person.
Right? She just blames, right?
I yeah.
think she does, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you say prayer.
I did. I've been praying. I mean, I was going to ask you about that, too, because I am a very faithful person, but do... sort of wonder about people that just, you know, give it up to God. You know what I mean? I've heard that so much, and I feel like that's such an easy way out in so many
sure.
situations. But I did hear somebody mention a prayer of release. Pray to release yourself of your resentments and your hatreds and your, you know, kind of freeing yourself. And I found it has done, it's been incredible for me. I do pray every morning.
Exactly, Lori. What do you do exactly?
I'm a speech therapist. And I'm a fitness instructor, personal
okay,
trainer.
So
and
what do you
therapist.
Do when you're going to try to go through this prayer? What prayer do you
Oh, sorry. I pray in the morning, you know, dear Lord, please release me from my resentments, my anger, my fear, and my selfishness. Those are my prayers every morning, same four lines.
Let's do it again, okay?
Okay.
Release
dear Lord.
Go ahead.
Release me from my fear, from my resentment, from my anger, and for my selfishness. And I pray that I can walk into the light and be the light.
And what do you, when you say to your selfishness, what are you referring to?
Like, the selfishness I think of is the stuff that makes me hold on, because part of you wants to hold on to your stuff, I feel like. So it's the stuff that, you know, would make me want to hold on. Or when I put myself, my own sort of needs, as an example, with my daughter or with my husband, if I just put myself before them. Not that I feel like I have to be completely selfless, but I do feel like, you know, I want to show my love for them by doing things for them before myself at times.
You want to, at times, see that there's more to this world than just you. You want to go outside of yourself and to acknowledge the existence of other people who you love and their right to be loved the way they
yes.
want to be loved. And that, by doing it, and whether you use God or not, you know, because for the atheists who are listening, if they just left out, they said, dear Uncle Harry.
Right.
You know, I mean, it would
dear
work.
Universe, whatever, yes.
Dear universe or dear mm-hmm. Mother Nature. It's a great question to ask yourself. Release me. And when you say the word being selfish, I like to change that word because selfish is kind of one of these things that you accuse kids of being when you want
right.
to control them. Don't be selfish.
Right.
That's what I tell you to do, right?
Yes.
Instead, being self-absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be forgiven for my own self-absorption because sometimes I get so wrapped up in myself.
Yes.
I just can't see anybody else on the planet. And, boy, I don't like it when I'm like that. And I'm talking as Armand. I mean, I just don't like it.
Yes, me
when
neither.
When I see myself that way, I don't want to be that way.
Sure.
And you're saying that as your mantra. It's your way of reminding yourself. So terrific, Laurie.
It seems to be working. I can at least be in the room with her, and I'm not seething, you know? And it's much more enjoyable for myself, I have to say.
Did you ever bake her a pie?
Funny you should say that. I have baked her plenty of pies, none of which she likes, but I do bake them.
So what does she like?
Oh, she likes chocolate.
So why are you baking her a pie?
Probably because I like pie.
Good. Would you go get her some chocolate, please?
I will get her some chocolate. That's a great idea.
And stop baking the pies. Send me a pie. Get her the
chocolate. I will do that. I would love to bake you a pie, Armand. What's your favorite kind?
I don't know. Anything that's fresh and real.
Okay. Well, I will get you one.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye, Lori.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. What a nice thing, and a spontaneous response, right? What do you like, Armand? Anything that's fresh and real. That's about right. You know, I don't like canned fruit, like canned cherries. I had a cherry pie the other day. I thought it was an all-natural cherry pie. It was so bitter. Oh, it was terrible. So I said, can't be this way either. It's like tofu turkey, you know? Didn't exactly make it. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
I'm Herb. I called up about 10 days ago.
Hello, Herb.
And I recited that poem, We Are the Wildflowers. Yeah. How you doing? I'm interested in your show today. I think I'm a borderline borderline. Can you be just a little borderline?
Sure, you can.
The only hate I really remember feeling was towards my stepfather, and that was rage, and that got settled. I had a big fight with him, and I hated myself for the longest time. And recently, in Al-Anon, I fell in love. Unfortunately, I fell in love. This is after like 60 years of not feeling love, you know, because of a terrible puppy love, a painful puppy love. And I fell in love with a gal in Al-Anon, except she wasn't my wife. You know, so I'm in big trouble, you know. I mean, 70 years old, finally falling in love is great, you know.
Well, let me ask you something, Herb.
Pardon me?
Yeah, let me ask you something, Herb.
Yeah.
Falling in love.
I mean, I'm not in control of that, am I?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Sure. In control of what?
Of who I fall in love with.
Sure, but you know, it's really not even a question. I mean, the question is, you found, let's say that you found a beautiful painting, and you fell in love with a painting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you in control of falling in love with the painting?
No.
If you met a being, and you met somebody who was so special that you could love them, it's a beautiful thing. Now,
yeah, but
falling
that's
in
not
love,
what she thinks.
You know?
My wife thinks that was a, you know, I was in, whatever that word is, you know.
A betrayal.
Yeah.
She felt it was a betrayal for you to feel this way.
An emotional affair.
Yeah. She said it is or it was.
She said it is and was, even if I call this person up like once a month.
Yeah, and I can understand your wife being a little scared by it, you know, but it sounds to me like you and your wife need to take a vacation. Where's the last place you and she have gone, just the two of you alone together?
We went to the movie and we saw what the hell did
no,
we
No, I mean somewhere away, you know, somewhere out of town.
We did something like that. We went over to Jersey Shore in December one time for Christmas and spent a couple of nights in a motel.
And you spent a couple of nights. That's what you need. You just take that time with your wife. And I promise you she will not resent your loving another being.
Because it's
not, if it's the kind of love that takes you away from her, that's one thing. But, you know, I mean, how could you resent somebody feeling love when they feel it?
Yeah. It's really great, you know, and then I get resented for it, you know.
Well, it just means you're not giving her enough attention, Herb.
Yeah. And thanks. Thanks
for calling in.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Funny things happen. You know, we're finding things about the chemistry of people falling in love spontaneously. And we know that it just doesn't have to do with the person. You know, you met a great person. It has to do with set and setting. Like, what's your mindset at the moment? What was going on for you? What was happening when you fell in love with this person? It's an amazing number of things, and it's never just focused on one. When you have a great relationship, you could talk to your mate about this, and you could discuss it with them and just see how you work it out. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
How are you?
Who is this?
This is Aisha from New Jersey.
Hello, Aisha.
How are you?
Good.
That's good. I have a little problem where a gentleman is madly in love with me to the point where it feels like it's smothering.
It's not Herb, is it?
No.
Okay.
But I am not in love with him at all. And in fact, I'm in love with this other gentleman who doesn't really pay me any attention at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why.
So you don't know why he doesn't pay you attention?
And
do you
know why this
other man loves you so much?
Right. And it's been over 2 years, and he's been saying, I've loved you from the moment I saw you.
So that person, you know, now that may be true. You may be just such an adorable person that somebody looks at you and they love you from the moment they saw you. But if they persist, in even when you're fighting them off, and
right.
then you feel this persistence, sometimes it goes back to that hatred I was talking about. Sometimes love and hatred are very closely mixed. I'm going to try to talk about that tomorrow. More on the air. Sometimes it's like, I love you, and if you don't return my love, I feel like killing you. Now, you know, it's such a funny thing. You call it love. I love you, and if you don't love me back, I'm going to hurt you.
Yeah.
What kind of love is that? You know what I mean? And that's one kind of love. Then there's another kind of love, the one that you talk about, where I love this person, but this person doesn't love me back at all.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the same kind of feeling towards me. So love becomes very confusing, and it may make you very angry. Do you ever get angry at the guy who doesn't acknowledge the love that you feel?
Yes, I do, because I don't understand why he doesn't feel the same way. I almost feel like the guy who's in love with me, because I don't understand why he doesn't want to, you know, doesn't acknowledge me.
And it may be because he feels just the way you did. You know, sometimes when something's chasing after you, you put it at a distance. Whereas when something is less available, you grab for it. He may just be somebody who likes something that's not that available. Is he available, by the way?
Yeah, he's available. Both men are available, but the smotherer, he makes himself so available. I mean, you can call him anytime, he's there or whatever you need. And it's just too much. Like, I tell him, back off, you know?
Well, let me ask you something. Did you have a mother that was like that?
Yes.
You had a smotherer, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so now, here's we have a very interesting thing. For some people, when very positive attention comes in their direction, they treat it as smothering. They perceive it as smothering because it's associated with their mother. In some way. In a way, you know, you're like, your mother's like hovering around you, like smothering you, like over. And that's, so when somebody behaves in a way like your mother, of course you're not turned on to them because then they become a female. But then I'll bet you had a father who was at a little more distance.
Yeah, I didn't have my father in my life.
Yeah, where was he?
Actually, I don't know who my birth father is, but I did have a stepdad.
And your birth father, you were never told about him? He was always at a reach?
My birth father, my mother doesn't know where he is. Since I'm 40 years old, I don't know who he is.
So
I
there
just
you
have
are
a name.
In love with somebody who is not available, just like your dad, and disliking somebody who is smothering you just like your mom.
Okay.
So it seems like you're going through some kind of primal battle from early childhood.
I wish it would stop.
Yeah,
it's quite annoying.
You know, we all get it clear eventually.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just takes a little bit of forever.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for calling in.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
And I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Armando Mill with you at the Positive Mind. Clerical Project, we're still engaged in that. You could find, if you have anybody who wants to get engaged in a project, you could go to info@thepositivemind.com. I am going to be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Armand DeMille. Bye-bye for now.
And you are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free, community radio WBAI.